Welcome to Inside Impella Transport Talks, your co-pilot for training. I'm Shane Turner, and I'm so glad you're here. As members of Abiomed's critical care transport team, we know that every transport is a lifeline, and every moment counts in our mission to recover hearts and save lives. Transporting patients with Impella heart pump devices demands more than just logistics. It's a delicate balance of communication, meticulous planning, and continuous learning. In this episode, we're joined by Billy Thompson, a seasoned flight nurse with tons of experience in managing Impella patients. Together, we explore crucial aspects of safe transport, from assessing patient stability to proper securing of the Impella controller. These key considerations are essential for any transport team navigating safe and effective transport of these complex patients. Let's talk. Welcome, everybody. Today, we have a special guest, Mr. Billy Thompson. Billy, why don't you tell everyone your background, where you're from, give us a little blurb about you.
Sure. So currently working as a flight nurse, I've worked in various programs from rotor to fixed wing. Also have done some ground critical care transport. Most of that was in our facility. Started my nursing career as a really cardiac surgery cardiovascular ICU nurse, so a lot of devices all the way through heart transplant. Then I found my way into the transport world and kind of been hooked ever since.
All right, well, thanks, Billy. So what's your experience with Impella? What kind of exposure and interaction have you had with that device?
Sure. So my beginnings with the Impella device started in a large teaching facility in Richmond, Virginia. We had a few Impellas. It started about 2014. They were kind of still the new kid on the block, if you will. So not a whole lot of use initially until providers got more comfortable with it and started to realize its benefits with our heart failure, in a hemodynamically unstable population. And then I moved to a smaller hospital, still fairly large, and a couple of the cath lab nurses started to move into the Abiomed side of the house, started to educate the cardiologist there, and we just saw a massive influx of use with the Impella devices to the point that they created a cardiogenic shock protocol, and we started to move patients from facilities and kind of was deemed, jokingly, the Impella-palooza. So lots of use during that period. It was like 2015, 2016. Then I got involved with a critical care transport at that point and started moving these folks from different facilities closer to a facility that had more options for those patients.
So you've got a unique perspective because you've managed them on the inpatient side in the unit, and then you've also been in the back of the, the ground unit or the aircraft there and transporting them as well. That's good. What do you think is, like, if you could put your finger on one thing that makes transport crews most nervous about Impella, what would you think it is?
A lot of us in the transport industry, don't really see these devices very often. It's kind of the pediatric population. We see, the tiny folks and, it certainly gets us ramped up, to a level, anxiety to perform. It's the high stress, it's the low frequency, high intensity situation. So these patients are certainly sick. Otherwise, they wouldn't need it. But it's the fact that, we don't see them often. It's low frequency. So we get kind of ramped up with that. You got to be the kind of subject matter expert with all these things, a little bit of jack of all trades, and be able to perform like the bedside nurses in that facility that's either referring or receiving. So I think for those situations, we kind of get tripped up, just with that overwhelming environment. There's tons of drips. Now we've got a device. And I think for me, early on in my career with managing these folks and approaching these folks, it was a patient with a device, not this device, So they're still a patient. you know, they just happen to have this that's helping them, and it's doing a phenomenal job most of the time. So
Yeah, I like that last part you said there, that it's not just the device, it's the patient with the device, because very easily, you know, this AIC and the fact that there's a, you know, mechanical pump in the patient comes, you know, it becomes the distractor, right? It becomes the shiny thing in the room.
right.
You know, so with Abiomed's new department of just providing, you know, tailored education for critical care transport teams, you know, we go around and we get, you know, we get to meet a lot of different folks, air programs, ground programs, fixed wing, rotor wing, you know, different team compositions. And, you know, and each program has its own little unique story. You know, sometimes it's, hey, we've got a new physician in town who just started implanting. We've never done them before. You know, sometimes it's, hey, we haven't had an in-service in a little while. I heard some things have changed. You know, and sometimes it's, hey, we do 20 of these a month. And we'd actually like to tell you some lessons learned, and maybe you could pass these little, you know, nuggets of education along. So, you know, we hear lots of different exposure, you know, we see different levels of comfortability. Could you think like any one specific area is more important than another in regards to, like, if you had to know all the things to manage Impella patients safely in transport and produce good patient outcomes and reduce complications, could you like maybe stratify that list? Like what would be at the top for you?
I would say it goes back to the basics. You know, we do in the transport world, we specialize in ABCs, right? It's airway, breathing, circulation, and repeat. And I think if you keep in mind that you are managing a patient with a device and you go through your process the same every time, you just add in device. It's just like a vent. It's just like any other device that we have on a patient that might be supporting them. Assessment is key. So knowing what that patient's baseline is, talking to the bedside nurse, start from the patient and then work your way back. So, you know, is the device and, you know, how's the patient looking? You know, A, B, C's, you assess them head to toe. And then, you know, is it in the proper place? You know, is the site bleeding? How's it secured? You know, is the sterile sheath locked, you know, and then continue back down to the device itself and then start, you know, identifying what is their norm, where have they been, how much cardiac output are we getting from the device, what P level are we at, what does the motor waveform look like, you know, what are your pressures, what are your, and just assessing, writing down. And I would say even at that point, you get to that, my little secret with these things is I'll take a snapshot of it with, you know, take a picture. You don't have any patient identifiers. Don't put the patient in the image. But you have a baseline for where you started with this person. And then continue on back. You know, do you need a transfer at that point? So once you know what their baselines are and you've done your patient assessment, you know how much this, you know, the Impella is working for them and what level you're at. Then you have an idea. Are we stable as you're transporting them? Or, you know, have we gotten worse? And do we need to give them fluid or do we need to address other things? So I'd say just start with the patient, move yourself your way back is how I approach it.
I agree with that. You know, I'm sitting here, I'm like in my mind, I'm listening to you tell like your kind of systematic approach here, you know, and it's funny because you have three or four things that you said first, which makes me think these are your highest priority, and none of them were actually like clinical related topics. They were, hey, let's check the site. Let's get a good assessment at the insertion site. Let's make sure there's not complications and bleeding. Let's make sure that my catheter lock, let's make sure my TUI lock is tight, right? Let's make sure that our lines are managed appropriately and they're not getting tangled. Like, so like to me, it screams that like the assessment really begins with like these kind of softer, like logistical issues. And especially in transport, like operationalizing that, like taking this patient that's on multiple infusions, potentially intubated and, you know, and mechanically ventilated, and you add the Impella, it's cumbersome. Like there's a lot of equipment, right? And that's not uncommon for transport crews, especially in critical care. You're used to managing a lot of equipment, but what we're seeing on our side, and we've got to these programs, it's like they get the clinical part of it. Like they're smart clinicians. They take care of sick people all the time. Their apprehension comes, it's like, hey, how do I get this from the hospital bed onto our stretcher and into our transport vehicle uneventfully, right? Like, that's where things are going to go wrong, you know? Like, and I joke often in our classes, I do, I'm like, my favorite meme is all those Christmas lights that are tangled, and it's like, dear ICU nurse, love the transport crew. Like, yeah. Inevitably, yes. You know, to despite your best efforts of being mindful of where your lines are at and how you kind of exist in the space, like, things get tangled and things go wrong, right? So what tips or advice do you have during that kind of critical phase of transfer, right? We haven't even transported yet, but just transfer. What are some, like, lessons learned and some things that you do to mitigate potential bad outcomes?
The biggest thing I do is just making sure the patient can tolerate what we're doing. You know, as far as when you're doing your assessment, before you move a patient over that's that hemodynamically tenuous, I might, you know, move them in the bed, might go from, you know, slightly elevated to, you know, less elevated head of bed, you know, making sure that they can tolerate, you know, head of bed going up, head of bed going down, making sure that, you know, if we're monitoring the ART line, you know, we keep that phlebostatic access and have a good baseline. Because if the patient's not going to tolerate, you know, that transfer, that transitioning, you know, we have to have another conversation. You know, maybe additional support, maybe blood, whatever it might be, you know, to make sure that that's safe. But in moving over, lots of people, friends are going to help keep you, keep that patient safe. So I like to, with these very complicated, all, you know, we have all these devices in transport most of the time. You know, we transition everything over and then we move them over to a bed. With these folks, I like to move them to our stretcher, make sure that they can tolerate that. We've got the lines, we've got, you know, space. We can move the IV poles. We can move the AIC on its pole and get that closer to your stretcher and get everything on the right side. Then have that patient somewhat in a, you know, favorable position. Make sure that they tolerate that. If they don't, you can always move them, you know, back, and nothing has been changed, and now we're not dealing with, you know, 30 minutes of IV pump changes and changing an R vent. We can kind of do this slow roll and a little bit more stepwise. So I'll get some friends to move them over. I always have with something that's in a patient, whether it's femoral, apical, or it's going right directly surgically implanted. I have one person dedicated to that, and usually that's somebody on my team, you know, and somebody with the ET tube airway to manage that. And then just having enough folks to move, making sure that the person that's at that insertion site for the Impella or other device and the person at the airway are at least making eye contact. We know we're moving, how much we're moving. If you need to do a half move or a full move, you know, that's been communicated. So communication is going to be key. Having somebody holding or in charge of that one insertion position so you don't move. If you've got a leg immobilizer, you know, making sure that that's nice and snug and appropriate. And of course, you know, before and after assessments, before moving, good pulse, you know, you get good adequate perfusion before and after, that kind of thing. But once we send them over, that's when I start kind of moving all the other devices. You know, we start, hey, are they going to tolerate our vent? Okay, now I can check that out and make sure that they're okay with, you know, transitioning that. And then just start moving the IV medications over at that point. And that seems to have worked out well for me. I've had one instance where a patient didn't tolerate any of that. And once we moved them over, we had to move them back to the bed. It took, you know, a good amount of time before we got maybe less than 10% of their baseline vital, you know, blood pressure map back, and we started having different discussions with the family, and they ended up withdrawing it at soon after. But that, you know, certainly very sick folks, and you know, it's helped me not have to undo those things. You don't want to chase your tail, so. Those are some good keys to kind of prevent that. And I think in the logistics end, that's where we usually trip ourselves up as transport folks. You can have a great smart clinician, physicians that do transport And it really is the logistics that trips them up. It's not the knowing stuff. You know, like you said, very, very intelligent folks in this industry, you know, they really have adapted in many ways. And the logistics is where we end up getting ourselves in trouble.
I like a lot of the things you said there. And I'm sitting here running through the things that we normally talk about at these training events, too, for these transport programs. And, you know, I really like to stress that, you know, this is that situation where slow is smooth and smooth is fast, right? Like, yep. We take time to make time. Like, you know, I could throw out a couple more coined phrases here, but like it's the truth. Like, just take a deep breath, you know, call a timeout. And it's like, all right, let's get a good thorough assessment. Let's see what we're working with here. And then establish a game plan, you know. And it's like, when, you know, when I was flying full time and we were moving these Impella patients, like I'm standing in the room and I want to envision how I'm transferring this to the space in the back of the helicopter. It's like, okay, well, today I'm in a 135, so the AIC is going to have to go first through the tunnel. And I know that I've got almost 10 feet or so of length. So let's make sure the patient comes in at the same time. You know, like I'm visualizing these steps because, again, if I know that when they get in there, the AIC is going to be on the patient's left side, then I don't want to start with it on the right, right? Because I'm crossing over, like I'm making more steps. What would you say to crews? Because I know, and I'll speak confidently for every transport crew ever, that when they're at this sending facility and the patient is sick, right? So they're getting transferred out for higher level of care. They need more resources than this facility can provide. They have, you know, different technologies and procedures available elsewhere.
Sure.
You know, that's an emergency to that sending facility. That's a sick patient. Hey, thanks for coming transport. You got to go, you got to go, you got to go, right? Like, everyone that has done transport knows that scenario. Like, the sending facility is rushing you out, you know, and they're not doing it maliciously, but they're like, hey, get this patient to where they need to go. But what it happens is it puts a lot of undue stress and unfair stress on that transport crew, because now I am hurried. And even though I sit here and told myself, all right, when I walk in, I'm going to do a thorough assessment. Well, they're trying to help me, right? Like, they're moving my equipment for me, or they're buckling my straps, or they're moving the sheets before I'm ready. Like, What tips do you have that kind of help you navigate that chaotic situation, and that way we don't overlook these really important steps and, you know, something bad happens?
Absolutely. So I would say, you know, in that instance, I would dedicate, before you get into the hospitals, have that conversation with your partner. You know, we work, you know, most of the time, a lot of places will work with the same folks over and over again. You know, you're the same group of people you work with. You know, so you kind of know what personality might be better suited for that situation. So maybe have the conversation, dedicate the person to go have that sidebar conversation with, say, you know, if it's the charge nurse or the, you know, maybe the provider, you know, the attending, and just let them know just kind of what your plan is, and then why you're taking these steps. That, yes, the bedside time is where we can kind of shorten things, because the flight time is the flight time. You know, we can't change that. We can change the bedside time, and we do get better with that with practice. But again, this is low frequency, high intensity. And just letting them know it's a different environment, having that conversation. I've had a lot of luck with just having the conversation ahead of time and just saying, listen, this is going to take 30 minutes or 45 minutes for me to get this patient packaged safely for transport so that we can get them there. And if you kind of head it off and you kind of get that feel that they're a little on the higher, you know, they're a 12 out of 10, and you need to get them back down to a 7, you know, the go ahead conversation, you know, preemptive strike seems to go well. And then you've managed expectations. But I would say, you know, dedicate that person, that way the other person can stay focused and not, you know, slow that even further down. It's kind of helped me out a lot.
Yeah, I like that. Good communication techniques. And you said it, as soon as you're going to talk and I was going to mention it, and you said it, it's just aligning expectations. You know, like, if they have this picture in their head of what this transfer is going to look like, and you have your picture of what it's going to look like, and they're different, like, someone's going to get upset, right? Like, someone's going to be disappointed because we're not on the same page here. And I completely agree with that.
Right.
So, you know, great communication, you know, clear objectives. Hey, let's kind of go over the game plan of how this is going to roll. What about in those situations where it's like a skeleton crew. I mean, we see this often, right? Like every hospital on the average is understaffed, right? And you know that when you come in to pick these patients up, you know, air or ground, the few remaining staff members usually scatter, right? Like they're like, not in a bad way, but it's like, hey, they're here for this patient. I no longer have to think about this one. I can go handle the other 27 things on my to-do list that have been growing, right? So if you're in there and let's make it a ground crew who during transport, you know, some systems, that's a single provider in the back. So the more that you can do in that facility when you have access to resources, you know, the better that transport's going to go. So what do you do in those situations where you don't have all these extra sets of hands that you would really like to have?
That's a hard one. You know, obviously, you know, we'll run into that situation at some point. So what I would do, you know, still have a person on that site when you're going to move the patient, still do all those things. You know, if you can get the charge nurse or the other, you know, bedside nurse involved, RT, if you can get them down to say at the very tail end, you know, if, all right, we're ready to move this patient. Hey, can I have you guys just for 2 minutes to move this person? Then you guys can go back to doing what you need to do. Might be able to get some folks to help you out. If not, even without the folks, when I move patients with devices or, you know, you have the Impella in their groin, I like to at least see it at a minimum. So even during transport, you know, just keep it uncovered so you know what you've got. You're not pulling it, and just kind of optimize as best you can. I mean, you're kind of doing the best you can in that situation, but maybe just get the folks in there, say, hey, look, this is 2 minutes. It's just to get the patient over. You might be able to get everybody to kind of pitch in for that, you know, manage expectations again.
Right. Yeah. And that's important too. Cause like, I think, you know, we've established this transfer phase is really critical, right? A lot of things can go wrong, but if you don't continue those practices and route, all that hard work was for nothing, you know, and I'm glad you said leaving the site uncovered. That's something we stress, you know, number one reason for site oozing is cause we don't have that angle matched anymore. That's, you know, where it went through the skin track. So you work hard at your site assessment and fix that before you leave, but then you completely negate it and tighten down a belt and then cover up with a blanket and route. Like, you know, we're not winning here. So I'm glad you said that. You know, another best practice we recommend is that, you know, that red Impella plug, you know, it's several feet away from the insertion site. And most times if they have a knee immobilizer on, that catheter and that cable has been routed under that just for line management purposes, which, hey, thank you, sending facility. Like, this looks really pretty, but if you have any purge problem in route, you need to get to that red Impella plug because that's where your yellow lure lock is, right? So now we're telling crews to, hey, pull that out of that knee immobilizer, keep it exposed, and even move it up to the torso. Like, put it, tape it to their abdomen or their chest, and almost loop like a breakaway loop of slack in there. So if something were to get snagged, it's going to pull on that red Impella plug and that extra slack you have before it actually tugs at the insertion site, right?
Yep.
Do you have any other like tricks you did in route to kind of make your life easier, you know, air, ground, either kind of vehicle?
Just like you said, having all of that readily available, you know, imagine, you know, you're in a helicopter or you're in an air, you know, fixed wing environment or the ground, you know, transport, you know, ground, you know, you typically got the left side, you know, the patient's left side open. So that's typically where you're going to secure stuff on that side. That's why we have all the IVs on the left arm, you know, and I think it's your access point. So imagine, you know, that and keep your lines, you know, I like to run on the 135. I'll keep all my IV stuff on the right. You know, my airway stuff's always on top. And then if I have a device, you know, it's kind of going to the left if I can, patient's left, and then I can secure it in a forward facing seat. That's the way we kind of have ours laid out. Currently where I am. So I can secure that all down and be able to see everything. Cause that's going to be crucial. You're going to have a person dedicated to that kind of thing. So you can address all the issues. The other thing, if you're really concerned about the modesty as you're kind of going through the hall, because you have a groin insertion site, I like to throw a towel so that it's not weighted and it's not pushing down on the, where that insertion is, so you can keep that angle. and then you can quickly see it, or if it's cold outside and you know, sensitive to that, you know, that could help address that. That way, if when you're in the aircraft, you can quickly just kind of pull it back, see, reassess, and have a good idea of what's happening. But otherwise, you know, it's really about access. You don't want to be crawling through the tunnel to having to take off your helmet and, you know, take that adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in regards to securing the AIC, you know, this varies greatly across programs, across platforms and vehicles, you know, and from the Abiomed standpoint, we don't advocate or endorse any one specific method, but we do have a few pointers we'd like to mention, you know. So the screen of the AIC is not a touch screen, right? It's just those five soft keys. However, the screen does give you a lot of valuable information. So I've had some pictures sent to me as of recent. You know, we'll go out and do a training, and then luck will have it, the very next day they'll get an Impella transport. And the crew sent me this picture and they said, look, we secured it with these straps through that ring on the back that you said that we could use for securement. You know, you said that was a good anchoring point, and our pilot was happy with it, and our ops and our safety guys, they, you know, they approved the way we did it, and they had the screen facing the back of the seat. So, you know, so it's like, in regards to securing, it's like, don't cover up the screen. There's valuable information that you probably should be aware of. You know, don't put belts over the soft keys or over the selector knob. You know, don't put a belt across the front where it's going to block that purge door. Because again, if you have to mitigate any purge issues, you need access to the cassette and the purge disc. And then, you know, where that Impella plug goes into the AIC, that's a sharp 90 degree angle. We don't want put a lot of pressure on there. Have you ever had any complications with securement as far as like being able to reach the console or read the information it's showing you?
No, it probably goes back to my cardiac surgery ICU, you know, nursing days. You know, just I had that exposure, realizing the importance of the information. These devices are amazing. Just, you know, the kind of information and the feedback that you're getting, knowing the functionality, you know, you wouldn't be able to, you know, see what alarms are popping up. So it's treat it like, you know, it's the ventilator. You know, you need to know if you have an alarm. It'll tell you, you know, what to do, and how to address it. So, you know, if you just kind of approached it that way, always, securing it usually in a seat, didn't have any of the mount options early on. I know there are programs with mounts, and they'll use them, and you know, that's fantastic, especially if you know you're doing those as often. But yeah, I just kind of approached it, you know, keeping it on the same side if you can, and just basically seatbelt it so you can see it and treat it like a vent or something else. So that magnitude.
Excellent. Well, Billy, that was kind of the list of stuff I had. Is there anything you wanted to mention that we didn't get to talk about? I know we focused heavy on just kind of like the procedural stuff with it, but any other topics you wanted to weigh in on that we didn't bring up?
No, I think have a good discussion with your program. You know, try to war game with folks. I think the other thing is, you know, remember, you know, there's apps that have been out there and great tools. Don't be afraid to call the Abiomed reps that may be closely involved with the cases. Early on in the transport, for me, in my transport career, I had contacts within the hospital. So coming from the cardiac ICU realm to the transport realm, I would call the folks and like, hey, I'm about to do this. You know, anything that you know about this person, you know, they've been involved with the case from ground zero most of the time. So if you know who they are, you know, if they're at the bedside, maybe have a conversation with them as well. Know that they have some pretty good clinical information that they can share. So I would certainly use that. Yeah, and just don't get overly stressed with these folks. They are, you know, the sick patients that we've done, but now they're supported. So it makes them just that much safer, just that much better. So it's a good situation.
I'm glad you mentioned, get in touch with someone from Abiomed. You know, we strive to have a clinical consultant, at bedside for every transfer to the best of our abilities. But even if they're not physically present, you're right. They're available by phone and they're probably en route, right, in all reality. But another great resource is our clinical support center. You know, the 1-800 number that's on the front of the console on the purge door, and it's printed on our transfer care checklist and it's printed on our ICU check-in forms is a great resource. It's staffed 24/7 with clinical experts, and they're not just there for crises. I mean, I've had flight crews tell me and transport crews call up because they said, hey, I've had a training, but I haven't thought about Impella in 6 months. Like, do you mind walking me through what I'm seeing on this screen? Like, remind me again. Oh, okay. I do want pulsatility in my motor current. Okay, my red waveform and my white waveform do look distinctly different. That's right. I do want to shoot for at least a map of 60. And they can kind of walk you through these little pearls. And you're right, you're never alone. I mean, there's a wealth of resources. The Impella app is incredible. All the content in there can be downloaded locally to your phone, so you don't need cellular connectivity or a good Wi-Fi signal. It has screenshots of what the AIC can look like. It has alarms, has troubleshooting tips, mitigation techniques for all the different alarms that may pop up. And I think even just having that at your disposal, like you said, doing the war games, like you find some downtime, just sit through here. Like, okay, if I got an Impella today and I got an air and purge alarm, what would I need to do? I'm like, oh, well, I can click on it right here. And I know that it's going to have an on-screen menu to guide me through it. And like you said, the console is so intuitive. You know, the AIC, really the technology in there is so user friendly.
Yeah.
And it's your playbook. It's right there with you. When something goes wrong, it doesn't just tell you what's wrong. It tells you what to do to mitigate it and probably what happened to cause it. I mean, it's the full court press there,
Agreed. So. Yeah. It's great.
Well, Billy, I appreciate you sharing your expertise and tips and advice there.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and look forward to hopefully seeing you guys more.
Thanks for listening to Inside Impella Transport Talks. We're here to support you in recovering hearts and saving lives. For more Impella transport information, visit us at heartrecovery.com/transport. And if you like our podcast, please head to your favorite podcast platform to subscribe and give it a 5-star rating. This podcast is sponsored by Abiomed. The information, findings, and conclusions expressed are those reached independently by the authors.